Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. You may have seen the YouTube videos, scores of big Asian carp leaping out of the water and screaming bloodied boaters. They are unbelievable little horror shows. But the big picture is worse. Asian carp are an invasive species that threaten to take over the Great Lakes and drive out much of the abundant other life there. To stop them, environmentalists are calling for huge barriers around Chicago and beyond, with multi-billion dollar price tags and their own dramatic implications. This hour on Point, the epic challenge of keeping Asian carp from taking over the Great Lakes. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you boated into a mass of Asian carp, seen how they rocket up out of the water, how they transform an ecosystem? Do we need a multi-billion dollar barrier to stop them? Can they be stopped? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Before we get started, it is worth your checking out some of the videos of Asian carp in action at our website, onpointradio.org. It is pretty amazing footage. Horrifying, really. You want to see it. Check it out. Joining me first today from Interlaken, Michigan, is John Flesher, Great Lakes reporter for the Associated Press. John, thanks very much for being with us.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
We've got a lot to look at today in terms of big plans on how this invasive species might be stopped before it takes over the Great Lakes. But can we just pause for a second? And have you seen these videos, or maybe you've been on the waterways yourself? I mean, I have to say, when I was growing up in a lot of these waters and there were not these carp there, the videos of families going through on a motorboat and suddenly the water just explodes for scores of yards, meters around, with big fish flying all over the place, filling the bottom of the boat, slamming into them, cutting them as they go. Have you seen that?
I have indeed, both in person and on YouTube videos and other videos on various websites. A couple of years ago, I was down in the St. Louis area and on the Illinois River with two different teams of scientists who are researching Asian carp, and I went out with them on their boats and had an opportunity to witness this. In order to capture fish, have an electrofishing tactic that they will use, where they actually put currents into the water, and if anything will make Asian carp jump, that will. And they were indeed flying all over the place. I got some very interesting photographs and had to dodge them a few times and had a couple of close encounters. But yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And these are not attacks, really. They're frightened, or sometimes being shocked, but just frightened, it looks to me, by a motorboat passing through. And in that fright, they jump. I read here they can jump 8 to 10 feet up out of the water. When there's that many of them and you're zipping through in a motorboat, it can be dangerous. Here's a little sound of a motorboat encountering a big bunch of Asian carp. This was in May on the Wabash River, and quite literally, fish came flying at them. Within what seems like just a couple of minutes, the boat is filled with at least 20, couple of dozen. You hear the cries of distress from the boaters and the sounds of the jumping fish. It is really shocking footage. You can barely believe it. Here's another bit. Boaters on the Wabash River running into a very aggravated school of Asian carp.
God damn, what the hell? What the f***? Oh, no! Oh, my God!
John, that is something I never saw coming up in this neck of the woods, but there's plenty out there now. These Asian carp, invasive species, and they're all the way from Louisiana up in what, South Dakota, Minnesota, Ohio? And the big, I mean, as dramatic as this experience is of passing through them and having them explode out of the water, the big fear here is environmental. And it is what, John?
Well, the big concern is that the Asian carp, and we're talking here to be specific about a couple of types of carp. There are actually four types of Asian carp that have been brought into this country. The two that are raising the greatest concerns are silver carp and big head carp.
Mm-hmm.
Silver carp are the ones that jump out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
The big heads are very huge. Some of them have even been weighted up to 100 pounds.
It's livestock size.
Exactly, yes. And both of these are plankton eaters, and that's what makes them so dangerous. They eat the tiny animals and plants at the very base of the aquatic food chain. And these are foods that virtually all fish will need at some point in their lives. Even fish that grow bigger and eventually eat other fish start out eating plankton. And so these two fish are just voracious. They're like vacuum cleaners, just gobbling up huge amounts of plankton. And the fear is that they're going to eat so much that they will simply destabilize food chains and starve out a lot of native species that are very valuable.
Now, they have spread all over the place. As I understand, John, they were originally brought in to help clean up fish farms in Arkansas, like keep the water clean there with their filter feeding. But one way or another, they're out, and they're very widespread already if you look at the Mississippi Basin.
They are. They were brought in, actually, both for the aquaculture and for sewage treatment lagoons, and they were, frankly, came in with the government's blessing. At the time, it seemed like a good idea.
How long ago, John, was that?
We're talking the 60s and early 70s.
Okay.
And the idea was that, if you've seen some of these ponds, you know that algae will form. There's a lot of this ugly green
pretty
slime.
Pretty mucky, yep.
Exactly. And so the thinking was that instead of using chemicals, why not just have a natural response? And these fish very happily complied and did their job. The problem was that there was flooding and they were able to escape into the Mississippi River. And once they got there, they just gradually began moving northward and up the Mississippi and up to a lot of tributary rivers like the Ohio River, the Missouri River, many others. And they have proven to be very hard to stop.
Nicknamed Kentucky tuna down in that neck of the woods. They're all over the place at this point, but not yet in the Great Lakes. Why is that progression so feared? I mean, they're already in a lot of waterways. I'm looking here at a publication out of Missouri now saying, you know, look, they're there and you can eat them. And some people say they taste as good as tilapia and catfish. There's some adjustments going on here. But if they get into the Great Lakes, what's the fear?
The Great Lakes has a very prized both commercial and sport fishery. The sport fishery has been valued at about $7 billion a year, and the people who fish here enjoy walleye, perch, whitefish, trout, salmon, which were introduced to the lakes back in the 60s. And the people really enjoy that and do not want to have any of those species driven out by these Asian carp. Now, there are a lot of differing opinions as to just whether Asian carp are good to eat or not, or whether they would be a suitable substitute.
They're very bony. They're not easy to take apart and eat.
Precisely, yes. I have actually tasted a fish cake that was made from big head carp. There is a gentleman from Louisiana, a chef, Philippe Parola, who is sort of making it a mission of his to try to sell people on the idea of eating Asian carp. And I was with a workshop sponsored by the Institutes for Journalism and Natural Resources down in Chicago a couple of years ago, and he had us in and fixed us up some nice fish cakes with some hollandaise sauce, and I must say they tasted pretty good. But you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone who would prefer Asian carp to the fish that we already have here.
Plus, there's the issue of catching them. I mean, they're filter feeders, so fish hooks and angling doesn't really work, does it?
It does not, and at least in very rare occasions you might snag one. But no, you can't get them that way. Usually they're caught in nets. And some of the scientists I've spoken with have said that even there, for whatever reason, they're just darn tough to catch. Even in nets, they seem to have a sixth sense and can evade them many times. They've had to develop some special techniques in the Chicago area to try to herd them into areas where they can be netted, but they're very difficult.
Midwesterners having some fun with this. They're trying to make the best of it. There's something now called the Midwest or the Redneck Fishing Tournament. This is in Bath, Illinois. Boaters cruise the Illinois River and trying to catch Asian carp in their nets. The fish scare. They jump up. If you can grab them, you've got a score. Here's a little sound from that tournament of that in 2011.
Watch up by Matt.
Ride it out right now. Sit down,
Angelo.
I mean, they pop like popcorn. They're so thick in the air when the boats come through. Another group, a good-humored group called the Peoria Carp Hunters, came up with a new sport. One person water skis behind a boat with a net to catch carp in midair. They're just popping all over the place. See the videos at our website. And then they've got a basketball hoop floating there. So you have to catch the carp in the net, put it through the basketball hoop, and you've got a score. That's the goal. Little sound here.
You do realize that we've merged water sports with ball sports and then mixed it up with fishing. I know. Let's call it Scarpy. This could become the next Olympic sport.
Good humor there, but we're talking carpocalypse here. I mean, they're having fun, John, but this is a serious environmental threat.
Yes, it is. Well, there's no end to American ingenuity, obviously, but in all seriousness, it really is. And there is great concern that, as I mentioned, they could just destabilize entire fish chains and food chains and just do a great deal of damage. So they're in the Great Lakes region. People are really desperate to keep them out if at all possible.
But there have been findings already in the Great Lakes of Asian carp. We'll look at their presence there, and we're going to come back, talk to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers about plans they've put on the table, big barriers, multi-billion dollar solutions to try and keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. It is quite a story. Behind us right here, some of those Peoria carp hunters with their background music to them out with their nets trying to scoop Asian carp out of the Illinois River. Good luck getting after a population this big that way, but they're at it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Asian carp, America's Great Lakes, and the epic struggle to hold off an invasion, to wall the Mississippi Basin off, in a way, from the Great Lakes. They are big, can get up to 100 pounds. They can be thick in the waterways. When a boat comes through, well, here's the sound of a family being bombarded by Asian carp from all sides. There are all those carp bumping the boat, and they're just out watering down the waterway. I mean, laughing at that point, but it goes on and on till it's not funny. Terry in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Terry, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. One thing is to put a bounty on them so that people will be catching them. The other thing is that if somebody can't prepare them so that people will eat them, they can still be used for cat food and fertilizer. And I think if somebody studied the videos of where they've been jumping out, they could figure out the pattern to be able to catch them when they jump out of the water. That'll help thin them out a lot.
Boy, I don't know. Look at the videos at onpointradio.org. It's like predicting popcorn, but you put a bounty on them. Let me hold that idea. And Roger in Oklahoma City. Roger, you're on.
Hi, Tom. A comment from a state that's a long way from the Great Lakes and also one of the most conservative and Republican states in the Union. I'm a Democrat myself.
Okay.
At the point. I want to give you a question in the form of a statement and respond to it, please. It's going to cost money. It's going to cost resources. We live in a country that's convincing themselves of being bankrupt by taxes. What does it benefit the rest of the country to eliminate carp? And why should we care about the Great Lakes?
Okay. Fair enough. I'm going to go to the Army Corps of Engineers for some solutions, but let me put that first to John Flesher. There's a question a long way from the Great Lakes. It's going to cost a lot. Why should we care?
Well, fair question. I guess the response from this area would be that a lot of money is spent in a lot of different areas of the country trying to solve problems of one type or another, and the Great Lakes is part of the economic engine for the country. This is an area that has a lot of industry. It supports the Great Lakes support more than 30 million people, providing drinking water to them. The federal government right now is already involved in a very extensive program to try to restore the environment of the Great Lakes. More than $1 billion has been spent thus far. So I'm sure the people here would argue that it's money well spent.
I'll put an environmentalist on in a moment, Joel Brammeier from the Alliance for the Great Lakes, to answer you as well. But I want to hear from the Army Corps of Engineers. Dave Wethington joins us. He's engineer and project manager from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. He led a study, big study, that looked at options for stopping Asian carp in the Great Lakes. Came out with a 230-page report released just in January, and 8 different options there for addressing this with price tags up to $18 billion. He joins us now from Chicago. Dave Wethington, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi there, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
We're novices here, so step back for a moment, and before we get to the solutions, what's the challenge? What's the challenge of keeping, from a Corps of Engineers perspective, of keeping the carp, the Asian carp, out of the Great Lakes?
So from a Corps of Engineers perspective, you know, Asian carp are fish in a waterway, and we as the nation's engineers really have a kind of a primary authority over the nation's waterways, especially federal navigable waterways. And so here in the Chicago region, there is the primary connection between the Great Lakes and Mississippi River basins through aquatic pathways. Mm-hmm. And so the study that we just recently completed and issued the report on investigated a range of possible options or technologies that may be available to prevent that interbasin transfer of species like Asian carp. But we had actually a larger scope to look at all aquatic nuisance species, identify which ones were of the greatest concern, and really develop a range of technologies and options to address those species.
Dave, Chicago itself, from very early on, has been a kind of a giant plumbing project sitting there on Lake Michigan. I think historically they reversed the flow of water around there so that sewage didn't just take over Lake Michigan. What's the physical challenge of keeping the fish out of the lake now and keeping Chicago viable in terms of drinking water, sewage, I don't know, transportation at the same time?
You're absolutely correct, Tom. You know, back in about 1900, so this project started in the late 1800s, and it was a magnificent civil engineering project to essentially reverse the flow of the Chicago River. You know, before the advent of modern wastewater treatment technologies, the common practice was to dump your sewage into the local river and let it flow out.
And when Chicago was the stockyards of the world, that sewage included a whole lot of stuff. It was a volume.
Exactly. And so when the issue kind of transpired that Chicago would get its drinking water from the same place it was essentially putting its sewage water, and so this kind of reversal of the river happened through the construction of a over 30-mile channel that essentially took the headwaters of the Chicago River and transferred them into the Des Plaines River, which then flows into the Illinois down to the Mississippi. And so that's the big challenge now, Tom, is that here we are over 100 years later, and you have the third largest city in the nation of serving over 9.2 million residents in the Chicagoland area that is used to the water flowing a certain direction. And so when you change that, you not only change the water supply for other states and the movement of water, you also change the way of life for a lot of folks in the basin area, those who like to recreate in the river, those who are commercial cargo carriers, mm-hmm. those who operate tour boats in the area. So looking at these potential challenges is really a multifaceted problem.
So they've got electrified defenses out there now. I hope you'll explain to us a little about how those work. But if you get into barriers and really surrounding or trying to wall the Mississippi Basin off from the Great Lakes Basin, what would that look like, Dave?
Sure. And so let me talk a little bit about the electric barriers. The Corps of Engineers is the primary agency that operates and maintains a series of electric barriers just downstream of the mouth of the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal from Lake Michigan. So we operate a series of barriers that is about 30 miles away from Lake Michigan. And the way they work is imagine a giant dog fence. So as the fish are swimming toward it, they get a shock that becomes increasingly uncomfortable. And as actually, you know, the circumstance would have it, they could get enough of a shock that they may be incapacitated, but the way the water is flowing is away from the Great Lakes. And so if they can't swim, the water will just push them kind of back to where they've been. So those are existing structures along with a multi-agency effort that's going on with the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee, where folks from other federal and state agencies not only utilize this electric barrier, but they also employ monitoring. They employ advanced fishing techniques to try and bring down populations of Asian carp, all with the combined, collaborative goal of preventing Asian carp transfer into the Great Lakes. And so the Glimmers report looked at, you know, it was kind of the next step. What, you know, what can happen beyond electric barriers? And since electric barriers are really only effective on those species of that swim, what else can be affected? And that's when one of the options that the report suggested, actually, that in two different alternatives were physical barriers. So what's the most kind of reasonable or easy way to prevent species from moving in an aquatic pathway is to stop that water? Well, unfortunately, because of the existing uses and users of the Chicago Air Waterways, the navigation, the flowage of wastewater, the use of the system for flood risk management, there are a number of different complexities that arise when you were to place a physical barrier in that system. It really kind of changes the way the entire system may react.
How would you even do it? Where would a barrier be? Out in Lake Michigan, away from Chicago? And how do you keep water flowing so it doesn't turn into a big, you know, still water sump there?
You hit the nail on the head. There are a lot of challenges there. The actual barriers would be within the channels and waterways that comprise the Chicago area waterway system. There's actually five unique pathways, whether they were the original Chicago River or new constructed pathways, that actually flow into a single point of convergence. So we have certain opportunities
sort of
along
choke
with
points.
Significant challenges. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so there are strategic places within the Chicago Air Waterway System, you can place those choke points and those control measures. But again, just placing them is probably the easier part of the conversation. If you now have a barge shipment of asphalt that needs to make its way through the system and you have a big barrier in that river, how does that happen? Or, you know, and another point is if you have a significant precipitation event within Chicago and you have flooding that the river is used to kind of move water away from impacted regions, now there's a block, there's a cork in that channel. How do you deal with the increased flood risk to the multiple businesses and residents of the Chicago region?
Dave, your Corps of Engineers report says that with enough sophisticated engineering, it can be done, but you're talking about spending as much as $15 or $18 billion and maybe taking 20, 25 years to accomplish it. Number one, is there the political appetite to put up that money? And number two, are the Asian carp going to hold off from the Great Lakes for another 20 years?
Excellent questions. And, you know, the report that we put out is a very conceptual level of design. We were asked to put out a report mm-hmm. in an expedited time frame and to look at, you know, really significant engineering challenges. You know, aquatic nuisance species control, such as the control of Asian carp, really is a shared responsibility among the multiple stakeholders. So what the Corps wanted to do was put out a menu of different options, ranging from non-structural type measures, like what's going on right now, all the way to that physical separation, and help that, you know, the collaborative path forward kind of find that, as you mentioned, that appetite. How much do folks want to spend? How much are you and I willing to pay as taxpayers? And where do our elected officials stand on this issue? I think those are all very interesting questions. Now, the Corps of Engineers, we stand ready to help refine some of those estimates. You know, $18 billion is certainly a lot of money. And, you know, while it may not be, once you get down to dotting all your I's and crossing your T's, it may not be as much as $18 billion, but it would certainly be a significant multi-billion dollar and easily more than a decade to build a number of these different alternatives.
Dave, stand by. Callers, and then we'll hear more from environmentalists as well. John Flesher, please stand by as well. John in Petersburg, Illinois. John, you're on the air.
Yeah. I guess the magnitude of this problem is I've read that 90 to 95% of the total biomass in the Illinois River, I don't know about the others, are Asian carp.
Wow. That's really taking over.
Well, I mean, I was fishing on Kentucky Lake last week, and the Asian carp are also in the Tennessee River. So I don't know what the density of carp are in other rivers, but in the Illinois River, it's just absolutely horrendous. And the other thing is there are international treaties as far as what we can do as far as water in and out of the Great Lakes. So this becomes a really complex problem, not just an engineering problem.
And, John, with that problem. Density, if it's 90% of the biomass, can you fish them out?
There are several different projects that have been tried. There was one group that was buying them, grinding them up for animal feed. There's another group that apparently they're popular. They can sell them in China and sell them in Europe, and their packaging and calling them Illinois River Rainbow Carp or some silly thing. I don't remember what it is.
And have you seen them in these? Have you seen them in these big numbers, John, that we see in the videos?
Oh yeah, I've been on the Illinois River, and I mean, literally, when they come up by the hundreds, and they don't know why in particular. I've not seen it on the Mississippi or other rivers, but it's apparently the shallow and round nature of the Illinois River that makes them jump the way they do. But no one's been able to really understand. There were some Chinese scientists who were in the area a couple years ago when I was up at Dixon Mounds, and they came to Havana to particularly see the Asian carp, and one of the American scientists asked what the limiting factors were in their native China that would prevent this, and they just said the Chinese people's appetite for fish would not view this as a problem.
Right, they would take care of it. Havana, Illinois there, of course. Petersburg, Illinois, John, I appreciate your call. Let me bring an environmentalist voice in here. From Chicago, Joel Brammeyer joins us. He's Chief Executive Officer of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Joel, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
What's the reaction been? I mean, we've got this big meeting last weekend, governors of eight states around the Great Lakes and a couple of Canadian provinces last Saturday looking at Asian carp and how to handle this. You've got the Corps of Engineers with a $15 billion or an $18 billion solution here. Is there the political appetite to act on this, Joel?
I think there is. You know, the risk of another invasive species like the Asian carp getting into the Great Lakes has really galvanized public opinion in our Great Lakes region like nothing I've seen in the past decade, and maybe even more. The fact that an environmental issue is making national headlines because of the threat to an ecosystem is not common here in the Great Lakes, and I'm pleased to see that level of energy behind the issue. Now the question is, can we actually translate that into an action that's going to work and prevent Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes? You know, the Corps' own report has indicated that the idea of separating the Great Lakes from the Mississippi River physically is actually the most effective way to do that, and that's what we've been supporting. I do think that the region has the appetite to go there, but our members of Congress, our states, our cities have to have a map drawn out as to how we're going to get there, and that's where the gap is right now.
Is there still time? I mean, I've got listeners saying, come on, Asian carp are already in the Great Lakes here, one listener says. Spending millions of dollars to stop something that's already happened doesn't make sense.
Well, the Asian carp are not breathing in the Great Lakes. There have been some isolated incidents where individuals have been found, but they have not invaded the Great Lakes yet. So we do have time to fix this problem, but we have to start fixing it now, and that's why we do need short-term steps in place, doing more to actually stop them from migrating up the Illinois River while we're developing a solution that works. One thing that we've learned over the past decades of the billions of dollars of damage that have been caused to the Great Lakes by invasive species is that nature finds a way. If we do not intervene and if we do not take the threat seriously, we will see another invasion of the Great Lakes, just like the zebra mussel, just like the quagga mussel, and all the other catastrophic invasions that have happened. So I don't think this region is going to stand for that. We've just got to figure out how to get the train moving so we stop studying and start doing.
Of course, you don't have forever. Joel Brammeyer, please stand by there in Chicago, and John Flesher in Interlochen, Michigan. Dave Wethington, I know I have to let you go here, but from the Corps of Engineers, what are you saying about how soon you need to get started if people want an effective barrier? When do you have to begin?
Well, you know, if the kind of the issue at question is Asian carp, we have a very good plan in place right now between the Corps of Engineers and the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee. You know, there's no evidence that the Asian carp are bypassing the existing electric barrier system, so we certainly do have some amount of time. Are there ways to, you know, increase the efficacy of those barriers? Of course. Are there ways to kind of redouble efforts? Absolutely. And so I think that's part of the conversation that, you know, Joel and myself and others in the others of the stakeholders need to kind of continue toward moving forward and addressing this this certain threat.
Dave Wethington, engineer project manager with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Chicago. Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Tom.
I'm Tom. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Asian carp, America's Great Lakes, and the epic struggle to hold off an invasion, to wall the Mississippi Basin off from the Great Lakes. Not easy, and these are big, aggressive fish who breed and move, and there are a lot of them out there now. You may have seen them in the waterways. When they get hopping and popping, it is something to see. Check out the video at our website. They really go. It's funny, and then it's scary. With John Flesher, he's a Great Lakes environmental writer for the Associated Press, joins us from Interlaken, Michigan, and Joel Brammeyer is with us from Chicago, chief executive officer at the Alliance for the Great Lakes. It's not an easy challenge. One of our listeners says here, why not smoke, grill, fillet, or bake them into extinction? Of course, you have to catch them first. Martha Ann in Nashville, you're on the air. Martha Ann, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a question. Well, as a long ago zoology student in Tennessee, we were working on the snail darter, mm-hmm. and I worked with the fish people. They had all kinds of interesting ways of catching fish, and mm-hmm. shocking, and rotenone, and things like that, that temporarily knocked them out, and you could select the ones you wanted to keep and leave in the water, and they'd come back too. But my other question, the main thing is, what eats the Asian carp in the natural environment? Because everything has a predator, or a disease, perhaps. But I think, with all due respect to my engineering friends, it's an engineering, you know, solution that's not going to work. If something can jump over things this well and adapt like animals can, you have to look at a biological solution that's going to actually work. Perhaps.
Let us test that, Martha Ann. I appreciate your call. Joel, how about a biological? First of all, is there a predator we could throw in there that would eat them? Sounds scary in itself.
Well, yeah. You know, we mess with nature enough. Sometimes it's best to figure out how to adapt back to the way things should be. You know, the Asian carp, the species we're talking about, they actually grow very quickly in their first year of life. And so they jump up to a foot long in 1 year. That means that the time that you can actually have a predator come and attack them is very, very, very small. They tend to get much bigger than the fish around them very quickly. You know, in terms of biological controls, you know, those are things that we need to keep on researching. The federal government is doing some, is making an effort on that. Not something I'd put all my chips on right now. And I do want to come back to something that Mr. Wetherington said right before he mm-hmm. came off the call about the fact that the electrical barriers aren't letting Asian carp through. That's because the breeding populations of Asian carp aren't actually at the barriers right now. This is about prevention, not about trying to stop something that is at the gates right today. In fact, the Army Corps' own research shows that small fish can school up and actually go right through the electrical barrier more than half the times that they were observing that happen. Fish can actually move through the barriers alongside of barge traffic that moves through.
So you're saying if a breeding population, if a breeding population of Asian carp gets near the barriers, they won't work ultimately.
I would certainly not bank on it. And this is why the Great Lakes community is so concerned that these barrier projects, while they have value as a deterrent, they are not a prevention method, and that's a fundamental distinction between using an electrical barrier and using a wall.
John Flesher, what about a more subtle biological response here? I'm reading just, again, in the last couple of weeks, week or so, a huge die-off, 500,000 Asian carp dying off in Kentucky, in the Cumberland River below the Lake Barkley Dam there. Nobody knows what it was exactly, a virus or a bacteria. It didn't kill other life, but Asian carp, a big die-off. What about some kind of viral or bacterial solution, John? Has that got people thinking?
It does, and as Joel mentioned, there are studies underway right now to try to find some kind of quote-unquote magic bullet that would accomplish that. There is a precedent here in the Great Lakes. There is a critter called the sea lamprey, which invaded the Great Lakes back in the last century, and it's a long, sort of eel-like creature that fastens onto fish and literally sucks their guts out. And it did horrific damage and almost wiped out the lake trout population. And they ultimately came up with what they call a lampricide, a certain poison that they're able to apply in the rivers where these sea lamprey spawn. And it does kill off the smaller sea lamprey. And so you have to continue to do it. They can never really stop. But it has drastically reduced the lamprey population. So there is research by the U.S. Geological Survey and others to try to come up with something like that that would target just Asian carp and nothing else, but it's extremely difficult to do. And you mentioned the die-off recently in, on the Cumberland River.
Mm-hmm.
These things do happen from time to time. There was another carp die-off on the Missouri River last year. And so the scientists are well aware of it, and they're looking to see if there is a pathogen or something that could somehow be captured and used as a target to get rid of the Asian carp.
It sounds like Joel Bremeyer, though, is not going to be confident in electricity or a biosolution as breeding populations get closer to the Great Lakes. Mark in Owensboro, Kentucky. Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to comment about how these carp seem to be changing our ecosystem. On a early duck hunt in September of 2012, I came across 19 white American pelicans on the Ohio River right outside of Owensboro, Kentucky.
Okay.
They were feeding on these carp fry, which were just extremely plentiful in the water. Again, as like a natural predator that you guys were just talking about, they were feeding on the small fry, 2, 3, 4 inches long, and were getting them. But I've been on this river. I'm 48 years old, been going out on this river since I was a teenager. Never before have I seen white American pelicans this far east from the Mississippi Flyway.
Wow, I don't know what's climate and what is the draw of Asian carp fry, a big, big appetite in the pelicans there for those, but that sounds, it's freaky to see them in such numbers when you've never seen them in 40 years. Joel Bremeyer, just a hint of the kind of ecosystem changes that a big carp population like this can produce.
Absolutely, and that's one of the lessons we've learned in the Great Lakes region from invasive species is that the effects are unpredictable, but they have been catastrophic enough that we don't want to run that risk again. It's important when we're thinking about the solution to this problem that we recognize that it's not just about stopping Asian carp. You know, number one, it's about stopping invasive species from going into the Great Lakes and dozens of them actually going from the Great Lakes into the Mississippi River and causing even more damage than what the Asian carp are doing now. That's number one. Number two, and this goes back to something an earlier caller had brought up, why should the rest of the country care about what happens to the Great Lakes? One reason is that solving this problem is tied to another problem, and that is the flow of polluted water going from the Chicago area south into the Mississippi River and contributing to the problems of the dead zone and algae blooms in the Gulf of Mexico mm-hmm. along the way.
Mm-hmm.
These problems are local to Chicago, but they're also national in scope, and they're all wrapped up in finding a solution to make the Chicago rivers and the Chicago waterway work in a way and function in a way that can sustain our economy, control flooding, keep our water clean, and stop Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes. We can do all those things, but we've got to broaden our view of the solution to this problem and start filling in those gaps that were in that Army Corps report that we talked about earlier.
Time for some new plumbing in Chicago. Maybe a lot of benefits along with it. Concerns as well from people in the transportation business in particular. Lynn Munch joins us right now from Paducah, Kentucky. She's Senior Vice President of Regional Advocacy for the American Waterways Operators. It's the country's advocate for tugboat, towboat, the barge industry. It has advocated against a physical barrier to stop the Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes. Lynn Munch, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
What's the problem with the physical barrier? People are worried about the carp getting into Great Lakes. You don't want a physical barrier. Why not?
Well, let me start with the fact that nobody wants the Asian carp into the Great Lakes, and the towing industry has been working with federal and state agencies for over a decade to make sure that not only the electric barriers were put in, but they were tweaked to make sure that the fish can't move through there, and there's going to be another barrier put in there shortly. So that's what our main focus is on everything, because we think there is a way to keep traffic moving, plus keep the Asian carp out of the Great Lakes. So we're looking at ways to make sure that the traffic can keep moving and the Asian carp don't get into the Great Lakes. We think there can be a way to make both things happen.
If the physical barriers do go in and they shut down water traffic through there, what are the implications, Lynn?
Well, the implications essentially mean that the traffic will have to move off the waterways and onto the road or the rail. And I think most people who are not really involved with the towing industry don't understand what that actually means from the impact and the quality of life. one barge is 70 trucks that will move onto the highway, and that will be a huge impact on increased air pollution, increased road destruction, increased fatalities, and other quality of life issues that I don't think most people want to see.
So at this point, what's the political momentum by your lights, Lynn? Do you think those physical barriers are going to go in?
Well, I hope not, and I hope not because I think 25 years and billions of dollars is a ridiculous time to think that you need to stop and solve a problem. There are already things underway with the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee that are viable options to actually keep the Asian carp from moving into the Great Lakes. And I think that's what we need to tackle first. I think we have to be timely. We have to be risk-based. We have to make a gauntlet for the fish to get into the Great Lakes.
There's a business here that knows the waterways well, and their view put forward by Lynn Munch right there with the American Waterways Operators. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Joel and John, here's a listener says to us online, I do a few Lake Michigan charters a year, and most of the captains I speak to think the Asian carp won't thrive in the Great Lakes like they do in tributary rivers. They've been found in Lake Erie for the past decade, but they don't seem to be taking over the lake. John Flesher, what about that argument that the kind of still water of the lake compared to the moving water of rivers is not going to be a great host environment for the Asian carp? They won't thrive anyway.
Well, that argument has been put forward. Most of the scientific studies that have been conducted have suggested that, in fact, the Asian carp probably could do well, at least in the areas near shore and in the rivers that feed them. And it's important to remember that that's where they would spawn. Certain characteristics of rivers are needed in order for them to be able to spawn and for the eggs to hatch and the fish to grow. And the Army Corps and others have studied this and have come to the conclusion that there are, in fact, rivers in the Great Lakes region where Asian carp could very well live. And again, it's a situation where, as Joel mentioned, there's concern that you don't want to gamble and lose. It isn't certain, but a recent study out of Canada suggested that as far as temperatures go, the water would not be a problem, in fact, even though it's cold. And there's just a lot to suggest that they're very adaptable and would probably be able to thrive in at least some very sensitive areas of the Great Lakes.
Jackson in Charlottesville, Virginia. Jackson, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. So I spent about a year and a half hunting and fishing some invasive species all over North America and the Caribbean while I was working on a book. And I have maybe a unique perspective here. I think you can build all the barriers you want and be very, very effective. But look at the geography. The river is so close to the lake, it's only a matter of time before Billy Bob the fisherman takes a bait bucket or a live well with some fingerling carp you may not even know what they are, and you're going to have an introduction event. Someone's going to move from the river to the lake, and that's going to bypass the barriers eventually. It doesn't matter how much you spend on that. I think the time has come to stop just studying the problem and move into eradication, not just prevention. This is a fish that literally jumps into the boat on its own, and a blind taste test, it's basically like cod. It's time to start removing them. We need Stone Age technology, drag nets through the water, build processing plants for them, sell them. You know, Americans, we don't know what fish we're eating, but what's in a filet of fish at McDonald's? Most people don't know, but they sell millions of them every year. So I think that's my perspective on the problem.
So get in there, fish them out, and eat them. Jackson, it's a rough line, but Joel Brownmeyer, let me put that to you. What about eradication? And with the incentive that this is not a worthless fish when you bring it out, it's got meat on it that our caller says blind taste tests taste like cod. I mean, is there a scenario in which we could reverse this? It looks pretty tough from the map I'm looking at, but go in, take them out of our waterways and, you know, get back to Eden.
Well, you know, driving down the numbers of carp in the upper Mississippi is a really, really good idea. The lower the density of the population, the less likely it is to cause an invasion. That's kind of a basic tenet of invasion biology. Do it. Get them out of there. Eat them. Grind them up for fertilizer, whatever it takes. But don't think that that's going to solve the problem on its own. In places like Indiana and Ohio, we're already in the process of actually building physical barriers between water bodies at a scale that's smaller than the Chicago area, to be sure. But that technology is already being planned for use in those places. And we expect those to go forward. We do have the ability to close down those high-risk pathways. and at the same time knock those populations back further downstream to reduce the risk to the Great Lakes.
Joel, paint a picture for us. If the barrier doesn't go up, if they do get into the Great Lakes and just, you know, go like gangbusters there, how does it change, look 20 years down the road, the environment, industry, the world of the Great Lakes?
John was talking before about the potential risk to the Great Lakes themselves, and people think about that picture. If I'm boating, you know, in the middle of Lake Michigan, am I going to see a carp jumping out? Probably not. But the Great Lakes shoreline, the river mouths, the inland lakes that are near the coast, and the rivers are all prime habitat for Asian carp. Those places are also prime habitat for something that we really, really appreciate in the Great Lakes region, and they're called tourists. We've got three big things we do in the Great Lakes region. We manufacture stuff, we grow stuff, and we do things. People come to the Great Lakes because they love the clean, cold water. They love boating, fishing, going to the beach. And some of these towns that actually are on these water bodies, rivers and lakes, are making a lot of their money from tourism revenue just out of a few months each year.
And the shoreline, if it were full of Asian carp, what would you see?
You would see fish jumping out of the water every time a boat went by. You would see a $7 billion sport fishing industry being undermined by another invasive species. The Great Lakes economy depends on the quality and health of the Great Lakes. And that means that we've got to do everything we can to keep these critters out of the water and make sure that we don't turn back the clock to a time when we couldn't count on the Great Lakes being there for everybody who wants to enjoy them, live near them, work near them, and reap those benefits that these global unique bodies of water bring to everybody here.
Fish jumping out of the water doesn't quite catch just how dramatic it is when these big populations go up. They're big, they're heavy, they're dangerous if you're boating through there, and they're a big challenge right now. Joel Brammeier with the Alliance for the Great Lakes, thank you very much for joining us from Chicago today, Joel. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And John Flesher with the Associated Press in Interlochen, Michigan. John, you're terrific. Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.